The opening words were written by Reverend Kathleen McTeague of the Unitarian Society of New Haven. We come together this morning to remind one another to rest for a moment on the forming edge of our lives, to resist the headlong tumble into the next moment until we claim for ourselves awareness and gratitude, taking the time to look into one another's faces and see their communion, the reflection of our own eyes. This house of laughter and silence, memory and hope, is hallowed by our presence together.
Please join me in an attitude of
prayer for the words of Thich Nhat Hanh. Let us be at peace with our bodies and our minds. Let us return to ourselves and become holy ourselves. Let us be aware of the source of being common to us all and to all living things. Evoking the presence of the great compassion, let us fill our hearts with our own compassion towards ourselves and towards all living beings. Let us pray that we ourselves cease to be the cause of suffering to each other. With humility, with awareness of the existence of life and of the sufferings that are going on around us, let us practice the establishment of peace in our hearts and on earth. Amen. To introduce our guest this morning, the Reverend Don Southworth. He is the Acting Executive Director of the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association. Since graduating from Star King School for the Ministry in 2000, he has served congregations in San Francisco, Atlanta, and now Durham, North Carolina. He has led workshops on growth, stewardship, and abundance for ministers and congregations in the United States and England. He and his wife of 24 years, Kathleen, have two grown sons. We welcome you, Don.
Our reading this morning is from the longtime Unitarian Universalist minister, Jack Mendelson, from a brochure called Why Am I a Unitarian Universalist? Who is a Unitarian Universalist minister? A person who is never completely satisfied or satisfiable, never completely adjusted or adjustable, who walks in two worlds, one of things as they are, the other of things as they ought to be, and loves them both. A UU minister is a person with a pincushion soul and an elastic heart, who sits with the happy and the sad in a chaotic pattern of laugh, cry, and who knows deep down that the first time the laughter is false or the tears make believe, his or her days as a real minister are over. UU ministers have dreams they can never wholly share, partly because they have some doubts about those dreams themselves, and partly because they are unable adequately to explain, describe, or define what it is they think they see and understand. A UU minister continually runs out of time, out of wisdom, out of ability, out of courage, and out of money. A UU minister is hurtable, with great responsibility and little power, who must learn to accept people where they are and go on from there. UU ministers who are worth their salt know all this and are still thankful every day for the privilege of being what they are. The future of the liberal church is almost totally dependent on two factors: great congregations, whether large or small, and skilled, effective, dedicated ministers. The strangest feature of their relationship is that they create one another. Here ends the reading. It is a joy to be with you this morning. I want to thank Janet, your excellent interim minister, for inviting me to be with you today and for the assistance and support of our service leader, Valerie Stern. Valerie told me yesterday that this was her first time, but I think she was just saying that to make me feel good because it is the first time I've been in this pulpit. I also want to thank the unbelievable musicians for your gifts today for the service. I've heard great things about the music in Austin, and I'm realizing it is all true. As Valerie mentioned, I am now the acting executive director of the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association. I bring greetings and tidings of hope and anticipation to you from over 1,600 active and retired Unitarian Universalist ministers from North America. As I have been reading your newsletter the last few months, I want to affirm something that Stefan Jonasson from the UUA told you a few months ago. Many of our UUMA members will be watching you in the next few months as you continue to lay the foundation for your new minister. I expect your search committee, when the time is right, will be hearing from quite a few of them. The UUMA's purpose is to support and nurture excellence in ministry through mainly continuing education and collegiality. I have the great and good fortune to serve, advocate for, and occasionally lead those people who, in Jack Mendelsohn's words, are never completely satisfied or satisfiable, never completely adjusted or adjustable, who walk in two worlds, one of things as they are and the other as things ought to be, and loves them both. Well, I'm not sure if all of us UU ministers always loves both of these worlds. I do know that Mendelsohn is absolutely correct on one thing. The future of the liberal church is almost totally dependent on two factors. Great congregations, whether large or small, and skilled, effective, dedicated ministers. The strangest feature of their relationship is that they create one another. This morning, I want to explore with you what happens when great congregations and great ministers create one another, or to put it another way, what needs to be in place to make excellent ministry occur. Excellence in ministry. What might that be? The Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association continues to develop and strengthen programs, training, expectations, and standards of conduct to nurture excellent ministers. But I hope you noticed that our purpose is not to support excellent ministers, but excellent ministry. Because we know what Jack Mendelsohn, and I suspect most of you know, ministry is not something that is only done by ministers. Excellent ministry takes ministers, of course, but it also takes professional religious leaders and congregation members to make it a reality. My late colleague Suzanne Meyer wrote, "A congregation is a cooperative institution. Everyone is expected to participate in the creation of community and to share the load. The operative question is not what I can get out of this, but what of myself can I give?" Faith communities exist not to serve us, but to teach us how to serve. Ours is a shared ministry. The word ministry, in its most ancient form, simply meant to serve. Gordon McKeeman, a former president of my alma mater, Star King School of Ministry, says that ministry is a quality of relationship between and among human beings that beckons forth hidden possibilities, and that it is inviting people into deeper, more constant, more reverent relationship with one another and with the world. If we hold his words and the original meaning of ministry to be true, ministry is to serve and bring forth the best in each other. Defining ministry is easy, or at least it is when we compare it with defining excellence. In December of 2008, the Unitarian Universalist Association convened a summit on excellence in ministry. Ministers, educators, denominational, and lay leaders were invited to reflect on the issues and the challenges we face in achieving excellence in ministry. Daniel Alshire, the executive director of the Association of Theological Schools, was the keynote speaker, and he told the group that excellence seems to be a hot topic between many different religious denominations and seminaries, no matter what their theological perspective. In his keynote address, which he titled "The Tyranny of Excellence," he said, "Being committed to excellence doesn't make excellence into tyranny, of course. But if these many different schools and religious denominations, with their different capacities, visions of the world, and strategies for theological education, can all use excellence as a descriptor of their identity, then it must have a very plastic definition. That is the tyranny. I have decided that excellence is one of those terms that everybody affirms because nobody knows what it means." Unfortunately, we all know what mediocrity in ministry means. Hopefully, we have not experienced it very often. But excellence is a little bit harder to define. Perhaps defining excellence is akin to what the Supreme Court decided and declared when they were asked to define pornography many decades ago. "We know it when we see it." Or in the case of excellent ministry, "We know it when we experience it." When we connect with something greater than ourselves. When we are transformed by serving others. When we find meaning and purpose and create a world with more compassion and love. In the early 1980s, Tom Peters' book, In Search of Excellence, was a rage in the corporate world where I lived in back then. 6 million people bought the book, and I was one of them. Peters was recently asked to define excellence in a time when so many businesses in this country are not practicing it. He responded, "In 1982, excellence was a static experience, but real excellence is always a moving target." Knowing that excellence is always a moving target, a target that we really never know when we have reached, and knowing that excellence in ministry is usually found in places which cannot be measured, our hearts, our minds, and our souls. I offer you some lessons that I have learned about co-creating excellence in ministry with the congregations I have served, and now the colleagues I've served. As you prepare for your new minister, I hope you find at least a few of them helpful. The first lesson is that the mission and health of the congregation is the most important work and ministry that ministers and congregations must be about. I am pleased to see that you are doing the work of revisiting your mission and asking questions such as, "What is our saving message?" Too often, our congregations, ministers, and religious professionals forget the mission of the congregation and focus too much on individuals and not enough on the health and the well-being of the institution or the mission of the congregation. This is one of the reasons we have not grown as a religious movement over the years, and it is one of our greatest causes for conflict in congregations. Ministers need to have the freedom and courage to challenge congregations into growing and into living their missions. And congregations need to expect their ministers and their members to pay attention to the mission of the congregation more than their own personal satisfaction. Ann Silberman Boone, a UU minister, says this well: "A church is not a place where you are catered to and pampered. Our congregations are religious communities, sanctuaries for those in need, safe havens and respites from the chaos of the world. Churches neither expect nor guarantee satisfaction." Excellence in ministry and mission are not about satisfaction. They are about transformation. in ourselves, in our congregations, and in our communities. Lesson 2. A congregation must always remember they are both a sanctuary from the world and a sanctuary for the world. Every congregation and church is first a place for people to heal, to rest, to connect with something greater than themselves. The world is often a difficult place, and we all need a place to come home to, where we are known and loved for who we are and not for what we do. But once we find a religious community like this, we must not forget that we are not simply a sanctuary from the world, but we are a sanctuary for the world as well. Congregations too often spend too much time dealing with internal challenges and issues, and far too little time reaching out to the world. Even something little like bringing a can is a step in the right direction. A healthy congregation will not only have a care team for its own members, but will have a care team for the members of the community as well. A vibrant congregation not only has a membership team to assist and integrate new people into the life of the church, they also have a team and a strategy for how to serve more people outside the doors of the congregation as well. Reaching out to another is at the very core of religious life. Being in community with other congregations, the larger Unitarian Universalist Association, other faith traditions, does not only add new perspectives and learning to a congregation, it gives people the chance to and the joy of serving and teaching others as well. Lesson 3 is a theological one. Remember that we are universalists too. In 1961, two religious traditions came together as one. Our new name put Unitarians in front of Universalists, and for most of our congregations, Unitarianism is the prime theology and main identity they carry. We call ourselves Unitarians more than Universalists. In most of our congregations, we seem to value the intellectual stimulation and rational debate of our Unitarian heritage far more than the heart-centered passion and love of our Universalist faith. But excellence in ministry, especially in the multicultural 21st century we live in, must speak to the body, the mind, and the spirit. Marlon Lavenhauer of All Souls in Tulsa, Oklahoma, is one of the largest and most diverse congregations in our country, says that he's not sure if Unitarian Universalism will survive the 21st century. But he knows that Universalism will. If we truly want to be more diverse and reach out to more people with the saving message of our faith, Universalism will be often more attractive than Unitarianism. Embrace mystery. Redefine God and language and worship so that it unites and moves both the heart and the head. Lesson 4. Covenant is not optional. To build the beloved community and practice excellent ministry, we must make promises to each other about what we value and how we wish to be with each other. We are a covenantal and not a creedal faith. If we are to grow in our spiritual and emotional maturity, we must agree on how to be together. Everything does not go. Being part of something larger than ourselves means that sometimes we must sacrifice something for the greater good. Covenants are not rules of behavior. They are promises about how we will be in relationship with one another and how we wish to be challenged and comforted into being better selves and better community. Covenants, when done right, create and nurture trust. Trust, or rather the lack of trust, is one of the shadow sides of Unitarian Universalism that often quietly destroys the morale and connections of a congregation. We too often do not trust our leaders, and our leaders do not trust us. Instead of assuming best intentions, we fear and criticize those who are paid and volunteer to lead us. When we speak about the benefits of building and taking part in a religious community, it is easy to get carried away with the ideals of what a community can be and forget the realities of how difficult building and taking part in a community truly is. But nobody said that church life or excellence in ministry would be easy. They only said, or at least I will tell you, it is worth it. Lesson 5. Be more religious and be more spiritual. To be religious, by definition, is to be bound together. It is to be aware of the sacred and be willing to manifest the holy more fully in our lives. It means participating in community and learning how to be guided and how to teach on the path of life. Spirituality is a commitment to embracing and enhancing spirit. Spirit, literally, the breath of life. Religion without spirituality is community. Rules and traditions that can become meaningless and even lifeless. Spirituality without religion can become self-centered and bereft of connection and caring for the world around us. Your vision statement, the words that were read this morning, say, as an inclusive, religious, and spiritual community. This tells me that you understand and know the importance of this. Of course, the challenge, as with all our nice words, is living up to them. Lesson 6. Spiritual practice is foundational to Unitarian Universalism and congregational life. Spiritual practice is the regular act of doing something, hopefully every day, that connects us with the spirit, the sacredness, the joy, the depth that lives within us and outside of us. Ministry, and especially excellent ministry, demands that we have a deep well to draw from. Spiritual practice, drinking from the springs that quench our thirst, is essential. Two fundamental spiritual practices are gratitude and generosity. There are many ways to acknowledge and celebrate these both in our lives and in our congregations. It doesn't really matter how, it just matters that you practice gratitude and generosity. The people who do seem to live happier lives. And the congregations where those practices are shared and spoken about seem to be happier and more joyful too. Lesson 7, cultivate and develop leaders. To practice excellent ministry, to create the beloved community, the congregation that transforms lives, that makes a difference in the lives of those everywhere, demands strong, compassionate, competent leaders. Leadership development, training, and support is not an optional practice. It must be a fundamental priority of any congregation. To serve in leadership, to assist and support your leaders, paid and unpaid, to spend money to make sure they get the best training they can, is what every minister and every congregation must be committed to. It is not okay for nominating committees to have to ask 20 people to find one who will serve. It is not okay for congregations to elect members to serve on their board and not give them the skills and tools to be effective. It is not okay for religious professionals to not have leadership and spiritual development plans in place, or for them to be not given the budget to do them right. Lesson 8, and last for this morning. Ministers are not your friends, so treat them better than that. The congregant-minister relationship is a unique one, intimate, without often being very close, formed in large part by past experiences and projections that have nothing much to do with what the minister or who the minister really is. Whoever you call next year to be your new minister, they will have some of the stuff that delivers excellence in ministry, and so will you. And you'll also both have stuff that will get in your ways. The challenge will be, what will you do with and for each other to bring out the best in both of you? Shower your minister with gratitude and generosity, and not only during candidating week. And most importantly, give him or her the gift of telling your truth. Don't expect her to be your friend. Don't expect him, I should say, do expect him to tell you the truth as they see it. And not only the truth that will make you feel comforted all the time. Take a risk. Give cards and presents even when it is not a holiday or their birthday. Be more generous and give more money so that your minister and all your paid religious professionals know you are as serious about this place as they are. And most importantly, create a congregation that enables and supports excellence in ministry in all its glorious, transformative ways. I wish you good luck in your work. May you know the peace, the joy, the transformation that ministry, excellent ministry, can bring into your life and into the lives of those around you. May it be so. Amen.
The parting words are from Robert F. Kaufman. We have come together to share our deepest concerns, speaking and singing words of inspiration and hope. We have committed ourselves to do what we can to ease the burdens of those who suffer, to stand for decency and compassion. We have pledged to work for a more wholesome environment for us all and for all the generations that will follow. But these are just words. The hymns that we sing are just songs. All our reflections are just idle thoughts. When we convert them all into loving and responsible action throughout the week, then, and only then, will this morning become what we want it to be, a time of worship.